Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Eric, a pretty solid showing from AEW tonight, I'd say. An electric crowd, especially in that first hour, and I think we could start in a lot of places, including that main event. But let's talk first about the world title picture. Lots happening there. We had Adam Page tonight interviewed in the middle of the ring by Tony Schiavone, seemingly ready to challenge Kenny Omega for the title. Didn't really say when, but instead they kind of get into this war of words and pivot to an elimination match between Dark Order and the Elite instead. So I think there's a couple different angles to attack this right out of the gate. First, the response to Adam Page. Second, you know, can they keep this feud hot until All Out, if that's kind of the direction they're going? And, you know, is what they did tonight an effective avenue to keep it hot? Eric, I'll toss to you, take one or all of those.
Yeah, so they have 7 weeks, 7 Wednesdays, 7 Dynamites, and probably, 3 or 4 Rampages, I guess. Well, that starts on August 13th.
Oh, yeah. God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
To build for what I assume is a world title match between Hangman and Kenny at All Out in suburban Chicago. And next week, they did announce that 10-man tag, right? So they'll do something to keep the angle alive next week to set up the 10-man tag. So then you're down to 6 weeks. You know, and maybe in week 6 you have the 10-man. You'll also have presumably the faces have to win to propel the story forward, and you go into then you've got the tag team title match between the Bucks and two members of the Dark Order, right, to fill some time and shoot some angles. And what they've done a really good job so far is Page and Omega have not touched, right? There has not been the brawl. They keep teasing it, so they have that to go forward. You know, those two guys throwing fists at each other, and so I think there's enough oomph there, and there's enough different combinations you can do. You know, singles matches between, you know, Colt Cabana and Carl Anderson, or, you know, there's stuff you could throw out there every week if you just want to shoot more angles to build up the world title match. So I'm not worried about that. But that crowd reaction tonight, the crowd has been waiting for this for forever. It still strikes me as a little weird that Dark Order is Page's backup. It's like the quarterback of the football team being his buddies are all the chess club. It's just, you know, kind of outcast.
Yeah.
It compared to like the star power and cocky heel charisma on the other side with the Elite. So it's a little, you know, it's a little jarring, but, you know, crowd just molten hot for this. They've been saving this match until they could have fans back. Now they do. And the buildup so far is going sort of exactly how they probably hoped. And I, you know, the sort of psychological aspect to this with Kenny hammering home, setting aside the goofiness that, you know, I know Wade Keller greatly dislikes, setting that aside for a second to just hammer home the story that Paige is afraid to fail. I mean, that's a great story you don't hear told that much in wrestling, because the baby face always has to have the square jaw and the stiff upper lip and vanquish the heels. So, you know, at the end, Kenny thought he was going to psych Paige out, and he didn't. He has the, you know, he has the match, and they didn't say when, but it's not next week, at least so far. And the segment was a little bit raw, long and raw-like, but, you know, it's live TV, and sometimes it goes a little bit longer. What did you make of that that segment?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought it was effective, for sure. You know, the crowd response tells it all. I mean, it tells that, you know, Tony Khan's shooting in the right direction with Adam Page. I think, you know, they have been waiting to go to this and go to him as a lead-ish type babyface, and now they can. And I thought it worked. I thought it worked well. And I'm with you. Like, it is a little jarring to see him out there with Dark Order. I've been, you know, regularly, you know, against the idea of Paige and Dark Order being associated with each other, really, because just Dark Order is, I just felt that during the kind of the holding pattern for Paige throughout the pandemic, Dark Order was bringing him down a bit. But, you know, again, you can't argue with the crowd reaction. You know, they had him in the palm of their hands. And, you know, Paige was the leader, was the alpha out there and talking for the group. And so as long as, like, I'm willing to see it through, as long as he stays in that role and keeps getting those crowd reactions, I'm good with it. And I thought it was an effective way to present him tonight. I also thought Kenny Omega was really good. It's amazing when you, and I agree with Wade in terms of like the quirkiness, when you can strip that away and when he leans kind of to the other part of, you know, the Kenny Omega psyche and the Kenny Omega character, he is so good on that microphone when he wants to be and when he has a direction and when he has, you know, context and a story to tell. I mean, he's really good in that regard. And I thought he drove, you know, the car, you know, right where it needed to go and got that audience, you know, manipulated in the right way to just be on Paige's side. So I thought he was really, really great. You brought up the point though of, hey, you know, they haven't touched yet. And I think that's something. I think that means something. I think that the longer you can keep that simmering, that's going to behoove of you and you being AEW, because I think, you know, you want that first time moment to be at All Out. Now that you have this elimination match, I don't know that you're going to be able to hold that. So I want to see how that plays out. I don't know that I'd hold it to week six, like you suggested. I think you want to get that, you know, get it out of the way somewhere, you know, week three to four, somewhere in the middle, so that you can strip away, you know, the Elite, strip away Dark Order, and just go Omega versus Paige. I think you have to drill it down to that for at least, you know, at least 2-3 weeks to build that, you know, a one-on-one match, get rid of all the teams and the factions, and just get to that title match. And I think if they can do that, man, you know, the atmosphere for All Out is going to be big. And I think it'll drive some business too.
I think, you can wait next week because Kenny could just play chicken shit heel and tag out if Paige tags in, right? You can do that.
Yeah.
At some point, you know, they've got to have a brawl in the next 7 weeks. And then at some point, they got to get the heel heat on Paige and beat him down, right? The Dark Order
right.
is locked in a truck backstage or, you know, something, and the heels all beat Paige down and there's nobody there to save him, you know, so that then you get the baby face seeking revenge
yeah.
at the pay-per-view.
Well, and I think, too, like, it's – I don't mean that they can't touch, but I mean, like, in a match. Like, I don't want to see – I don't want to see like weeks on end of different tag matches where Kenny Omega is teaming with somebody and Paige is there too. And then by the time the pay-per-view happens, you've seen them wrestle, you know, in different iterations. Like I
right.
hopefully maybe they'll do the elimination match. Obviously that's where they're going. So they'll do that. You know, I think that's a good kind of holding spot to, you know, squeeze as much out of this as you can content wise. Cause you've got two shows now to manage. But yes, they definitely, you know, can factor in some angles, you know, to get heat on Omega. That's absolutely in the cards. And so honestly, yeah, you break it down like that, you build this elimination match, then you can, you know, have different angles here and there. And then I think you're probably okay as long as that, you know, that reaction to Paige like stays piping hot. The good thing that AEW has going for them is that they're, you know, in the lead up to All Out and then in Chicago that weekend, that, you know, they're going to be in front of fresh audiences that haven't seen these guys in a long, long time. Most of them or most folks. So that's going to, you know, it's like you get a fresh, brand new reaction every single week.
Yeah. Chicago is for that Wednesday Dynamite before All Out. That's going to be a local fan show. And you're going to get, you know, Chicago crowds are usually pretty hot. It's a pretty good wrestling city historically. And then for, you know, Rampage will be some travel, some local folks. And then All Out's going to be, you know, people from all over the country, and the pay-per-view crowds are always hot for AEW because it's a fly-in
yeah.
crowd. It's four times a year. And And should Paige go on to win the, you know, AEW World title from Omega? And if the, you know, if it keeps going this way, it's sure going to seem like the time is right. Man, wow. That, you know, the roof will come off the place. It'll be equal to Cody versus Aldis at All In, which took, yeah, blew the roof off the place.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we talked about Omega, and let's just touch on Adam Page here real quick, and then we are going to get to all the callers in the queue and on-site correspondent who is live in the building as well to give us that, you know, in-person perspective here in a second. But Adam Page, you know, I mean, talk about him for a little bit. I mean, how's he doing? He looked comfortable out there to me. He looked, you know, confident in the role and kind of, you know, confident to be like, you know, the face of this title run here. And I thought he came across authentic and real. And it wasn't like he was kind of forcing this narrative. I think you kind of got the perception that, you know, you could feel this in him. And so I think that's a big thing. And as long as they can kind of keep it that way and keep that authentic tone to him, it's going to work. I think it's going to work.
Yeah. He didn't have a ton of heavy lifting to do tonight. I mean, you had a bunch of people with microphones, but you had so many good talkers on the heel side. You know, Omega was good tonight. He's not always good. Callis is fantastic on the mic. And
yeah, man, they gave him a ton of heat, man. Yeah, that was,
yeah,
that was good.
But what I really liked in this segment was they put heel Matt Jackson in the ring with the microphone, and he's really good as a heel with the microphone. I mean, I know Nick Jackson has been criticized for sort of sleepwalking through some of their babyface time, and, you know, I don't know how much of that was him being unenthused, how much of it was him recovering from COVID, but Matt Jackson, you know, I've always liked him and his heel mannerisms, and he, you know, he got to go in and give it verbally to Hangman, and he took a bump, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, I guess now that I'm thinking out loud, you know, Hangman's a cowboy, right? Cowboys aren't like talky guys, right? Cowboys are the strong silent types, generally speaking, in film, and they don't have to cut a big long promo and talk for 20 minutes to get their point across. They use their fists, right? And to the extent that Paige had something to do tonight, he did it well. But the pressure was more on the heels to get the heat on Paige and tell the story.
Yeah, yeah, good point. Yep. He certainly did what he needed to. And yeah, I think there's going to come a time where, yeah, you don't need a long, you know, go home promo for him. But I think you're going to need that kind of definitive. I think that definitive moment with him on the mic, even if it's three sentences, you know, but that just, you know, tells it like it is. And I think that's coming. I hope that's coming anyway.
Yeah. You can spend 1 week with JR doing a sit down with Hangman Page, and you can run 7 minutes as a road two, and you can run 2 minutes on Dynamite or Rampage and get the point across. And maybe Hangman in a live promo situation, it's better for him to do three sentences. Right. I don't know. I don't recall that many really long live promos from the guy. So AEW is smart about setting people up and playing to their strengths, or they've gotten better at it as the promotion has gotten, you know, a little more experience under its belt.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's stop there for a second and set the table for the show before we open up the phone lines and start taking calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the July 14th, 2021 edition of AEW Dynamite. It's Fighter Fest Night 1. I'm PW Storch Assistant Editor, Zach Cator, and I'm filling in for Wade. And Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later with his rundown and full analysis of tonight's Fighter Fest Night 1 show. If you're interested in going VIP and checking that out on the Wade Keller hotline, it's pwtorch.com/govip for more information. pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear with me tonight is that of former PW Torch columnist Eric Kroll. Eric, great to have you on the show, and always fun talking wrestling with you, man.
It's the Chicago connection tonight.
That's
my
right.
Friends, you'll hear a lot of sports radio meatball talk, my friends.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yep. The Chicago connection, man. We didn't have so much to get to with what happened on Dynamite tonight. I feel like, you know, we could even get into some depressing Bears talk, maybe even some excited Bears talk. I don't know.
They have a new quarterback, I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear he sounds pretty good. He sounds pretty good.
Hopefully they'll play him. Yeah.
Yeah. We just jinxed whatever potential he had mentioning it.
But, broken ankle in week one.
Yeah. Such is life as a broken down Bears fan. The phone lines are open, guys. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Make sure to press 1. We do have quite a few people waiting to get in, so which is great. We will do our best to get to everybody. So if you can, you know, keep the questions and points to the couple to make sure everybody gets a turn. And then a little bit later, we will have an on-site correspondent join us and to give us that in-building perspective, you know, who had the best pop, who had the weakest pop, was it sold out, et cetera, et cetera. We'll break all that down with him a little bit later. And if you don't feel like chatting with us live here on the show, you can send us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to that that mailbag a little bit later. But, Eric, let's roll here with the first call, man.
All right, who we got?
We got 410. 410, you're up first tonight. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
How you doing, gentlemen? This is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore.
Keith, always a pleasure, my friend. What did you think of the show tonight?
I thought especially the first hour was fire. I mean, the crowd at the HEB Center in Cedar Park, Texas was fire, and they were so ready for some live wrestling, just like I was when I attended Ring of Honor Best in the World Sunday here in Baltimore. I know what it's like, it, you know, when you are so used to being around a lot of fans and you've been restricted for 16 months to be out there, man. I could just tell that it made the wrestlers feel a lot better tonight. You could see it in their eyes, the look on their faces, just to be in front of the live crowd. I thought it was just electric.
Yeah, I did too. It really made for, you know, it made for not only a great environment to watch the show, but it also, I think, for the most part, you know, impacted all the angles and all the matches and all, like, the directions they took stories. Having that immediate feedback from the live crowd, I mean that matters. And I think there were some times tonight where the reaction maybe didn't quite go the way things were scripted to go. We can talk about that a little bit. But yeah, Eric, your take on the audience and kind of what it did for the show, kind of on a broad level.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story of tonight's show overall is that a hot, well-mic'd crowd makes all the difference in the world. Last week, I'm told or I have heard that in Miami, the crowd just wasn't that well-mic'd. Like, the reactions they were giving wasn't coming across as well on TV, but it sure as heck did this week. And you can paper over some, you know, some flubs in the ring or stuff that isn't quite great or is only good when that crowd is just eating out of the palm of your hand in just about every segment, especially the first hour, as you guys have said. And that really bodes well for AEW because we're only in week two of the return to, you know, full houses. And so before the pandemic struck, you know, the crowd was AEW's secret weapon, right? The hot reactions they would get, it made everything seem better than it was. It made, you know, in the case of Ricky Starks and Brian Page, I mean, those guys are pushed acts, but, you know, only pushed to the mid-card, and the crowd was going nuts for that match. And, you know, it took a mid-card match and made it, you know, made it something special.
That was one of the matches that I, you know, I don't – it seemed like they were maybe trying to go for heat, you know, at the way that thing finished out. And, you know, Starks just ended up getting cheered the whole time. And so, I mean, to me, like, you know, the announcers were kind of supposed to sell, hey, Brian Cage kind of got two-timed by his own group. And – but I think they pulled the reins back when they realized that the audience was just firmly on the side of Ricky Starks, Eric.
Yeah, it's – you know, it was a heel versus heel
if,
match.
If you go down this ramp.
Go ahead.
It was a heel versus heel match. And so if you don't give the fans a clear reason to boo or cheer one or the other, you know, they're going to go with the guy with the charisma, right? Brian Cage looks amazing, but is great. Not anywhere near in the same ballpark as Starks is on promos. So, you know, maybe that's what you get. Ricky Starks has been, you're also finding out who's getting over, who's gotten over during this pandemic, right? Starks has clearly gotten over during the pandemic, and you get to find out now because you get the crowd reaction to tell you.
Do you get the sense that this was, you know, a babyface turn for Team Taz, and Cage is going to be kind of the heel now that they ditched? Or was this written to be? Because I don't know. Again, when you look at the finish, like, I kind of thought it was written to be, okay, Cage is now, and this isn't a good way to turn anybody babyface, but he's now the disc guy from the group, but they're still like the group of heel jerks. I just don't know that the crowd is going to be on board with that given the response tonight.
Yeah, they certainly wrote it. I mean, textbook booking is, you know, Will Hobbs, you know, does the swerve, uses the belt to help Ricky Starks win and take the FTW belt. There's no other way to interpret that in pro wrestling is other than that was Starks and Hobbs being a heel and Cage, you know, being turned on by his partners. And obviously, you don't get that kind of reaction. I guess you can maybe try and fix that in the follow-up. It depends on, you know, yeah. You've now set up Brian Cage versus Will Powerhouse Hobbs, and so you've got that match to look forward to, and Hobbs kind of has that natural heel sneer going, and you can use that to establish Cage as the babyface, even if that's a tough road against Ricky Starks.
Yeah, and let's talk about Ricky Starks for a minute, because, man, I mean, there's a guy that, like, you know, he came into the company in the pandemic, you know, and you don't, you know, you have kind of the – you had the crowds, small crowds in Daly's place that, you know, were there and reacting for him. And I think if you just are on social media and you're reading about, you know, the business, about the company, you get the sense that he's a guy that's, you know, trending in the right direction. But man, that response to him tonight, that was impactful. And that was kind of makes you turn your head and go, all right, hey, maybe, you know, he needs to factor into some potential bigger plans down the road. I thought he had just a great showing tonight, not just in the ring, but just from a charisma point of view too.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Ricky Starks so far in his AEW tenure has sort of been like a Sammy Guevara type in that he gets a bunch of wins on Dark and Dark Elevation, but then he's sort of been a jobber to the stars, right? I mean, he's a pushed guy to a certain point, but he hasn't gotten that many big wins. And tonight he sort of got a big signature win over Brian Cage. I guess you could debate that depending on how much you think Cage is over. Right. But certainly you would think it does position him for a bigger push going forward if he can continue to get these kind of reactions and it wasn't just a one-off. I tend to think it's not. And so, you know, it's part of AEW's big problem. They've got all these young stars, you know, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, Ricky Starks, Sammy Guevara, and there's only so many, you know, spots to push people on the card, right? Only so many slots at a pay-per-view. And so what do you do with all this talent that you've managed to get over, especially young new stars, which, you know, WWE would kill for, to have somebody under the age of 30 super over like Darby Allin or Jungle Boy is. So I guess it's a good problem to have if you're Tony Khan.
For sure. I don't think, he's not upset right now, for sure. Keith, back to you. Any comments on Cage Starks or just another topic altogether?
No, I just have two, and then I'm going to go and let you marinate over it. Starks is so popular in Texas because he currently lives in Austin. And I wanted to say that I know you guys have discussed the fact that maybe they should wait on having Hangman and Omega touch, but I was hoping they would have done that with Cody and Black, but then they got into the shoving altercation, because I think that's going to be a nice feud right there, Cody and Black, and I think that'll last a while, and of course Arn and others will get involved. But I just wanted to discuss those two topics. I'm with you too on Starks, though. He's a house of fire. I followed him from when he was in NWA, when he wrestled for Warrior Wrestling and other independent promotions. He's definitely a star in the making. He's a star of the future, and just like with Sammy Guevara, they're going to be at the head of the class in the next year or two. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call, and greetings from Baltimore, Maryland, which is also a hotbed for wrestling. Have a great night.
You too, Keith. Thanks for making the call. As always, always great to talk to you. Yeah. Eric, what did you make of that angle tonight with Cody and Black?
It started kind of weird because it's, you know, the show clearly was running long. They had to maybe shave a little bit of time off the main event. you know, probably shave a little bit of time off the Sammy match, although that probably should have been a 4-minute match, and it was. Maybe they shaved time off the women's match because they got cut. They had three matches to go with, and they were at 8:30 p.m. Central. So the Cody part that was weird was when he started talking to the announcers, and then he's like,
yeah.
No, I'm going to go do a full promo in the ring. And it's just, it's sort of that, you know, Cody is very extra, right? It's part of his appeal. And then he goes to the ring and he does his promo and they do that WWE style thing with the guys talk, the heels talk, somebody's talking on the screen, usually the heel, and then the lights go out, which will be another thing I imagine Wade is going to pan, as hacky. But
he's not even here to defend himself. Not even here to defend himself.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to, in his absence, represent what I think his viewpoint would be.
Yep.
And you know, he's been watching wrestling a long time. So I think I didn't mind that they started going at each other. I was surprised maybe that Black came out. But once he did, they had to go at it because Cody would look like a dumb baby face if he didn't go right at Black, because Black laid him out with the whatever they're calling the Black Mass now, and he laid out Arn Anderson, early 60s iconic 80s horseman wrestler. And so that was natural. They did not announce when that first match will take place, you'll notice. So we've got, you've got another match that's set up for the future, and they've got a lot of tickets to sell in the coming weeks and months. And they've got, you know, they got that Arthur Ashe big stadium show. They've got All Out. To Reverend Keith's point, you know, yes, this could be a long feud. I mean, AEW tends to want to do one match and then move on to the next thing. Sometimes, you know, Cody MJF, I'm still surprised they didn't milk that for a little bit more. MJF got his big win over Cody and route to challenging Moxley for the title later that year. And they never went back to it. You know, which does leave them room to go back to it in the future. But sometimes you need more than one match to sort of make a feud or burn the feud in and make it legendary. I'm not talking WWE style. You have limited wrestlers you're going to put on TV, and they're going to wrestle six times before the pay-per-view, and you're sick of it by then. But you know, there's a happy medium between one match and six matches, right? I think they could. What did you make of the Cody Black angle?
I thought it was pretty much what it needed to be. You know, I mean, unless you're just going to take Cody off TV this week and not have him on and just do a follow up some other time. I think if you're going to have him out there and you're going to have him cut the promo that he did, you know, the way that he did and with the aggression that he had, you know, I think you just got to go with it. I don't think, like, look, the reality is you can't put on weekly TV shows and not have any of these guys touch. I think you want to have different kinds of programs and different kinds of angles throughout feuds and throughout your shows. And so, you know, right now you kind of have the biggest one, this Omega versus Adam Page, you know, feud for the title that's simmering. So I think elsewhere on the card, you can have more of like a, you know, an aggressive type feud where they're at it and at each other's throats, you know, fighting each and every single week. I think it, you know, sets the tone for the show. I think it kind of paces the show, you know, in different directions. And I think it's just, you want to have different things going. So I was fine with it. I mean, I think Black, he already seems to have a really good presence on the show for who he is and his character. I wonder if they're going to, you know, do this match, or at least the first match maybe on television to kind of set up the All Out match. Cause there is, like you said, there's 7 weeks to go. You know, they can't just brawl like this every single week. So I wonder if they will use, you know, kind of their first encounter as a stopover to something bigger at All Out. But I like that, you know, I like that Black has joined the company and joined it in a big way at a top level against one of the top stars. And yeah, Cody was booed tonight a little bit. Well, looking forward to talking with the on-site correspondent about that. But regardless, you know, he's coming in and he's, you know, he's in there with one of AEW's biggest stars. And I think that's really telling for him. Go ahead.
Were they booing Cody because of his remark to Black at the start before they started brawling, which is all you needed to do was make a call, which has that sort of I'm an executive VP, let's break the fourth wall thing that some members of the Pro Wrestling Torch family like more than others. I wonder if that's why they were booing him. Or is it just that the former Aleister Black is so cool, right? And comes across as something different, unique, and a bit of a badass that, you know, that anti-hero-ness appeals to people. I don't know. I'm interested to hear what the on-site correspondent had to say as well.
Yeah, I am too. All right, let's keep the calls going. 419, Craig from Toledo, you are up next. Craig, always great to talk to you, man. What'd you think of the show tonight? Craig, you with us? All right, Craig, we'll come back to you. We'll come back to you. We'll go to, let's see here, Chris, 709, Chris from Mount Palin. Chris, thanks for joining the show. Thanks for making the call. What'd you think of Dynamite?
Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Doing well, man. Good to chat. What'd you
think
of the show?
Yeah, good to talk to you both. The show was good. Not great. I was hoping for a surprise or two, but I guess they have to space those out a bit. Since you're both Chicago people, I just want to say Portillo's changed my life. So I figured you'll appreciate that.
What was your go-to?
You got to have the sausage and peppers, right? But it was the lemon drizzle cake that did it. It was, you just got to go lemon cake.
Oh, man.
Yep. I think they brought that back for a limited time.
Yeah, it was a limited time thing, and I was told on pain of death to get it. So definitely don't regret that.
You guys are making me hungry. Thanks a lot.
So the main event, I think you guys have really talked a lot about that. I want to talk about two differing crowd reactions. I'll start with Sammy. I don't think Sammy had any idea he was going to be that over. When he came out, he almost looked shocked and a little bit like, oh, what do I do with this? He got a huge reaction. I'd put it up there with Paige's. And even if the match itself was a little strange, I guess Tony Khan knows that Wheeler Yuta has literally wrestled everywhere over the past couple of months, and he wants to keep him around. But it's sort of two face-ish characters in a nothing match seemed a little weird, but Sammy and AEW have to be loving that pop. On the other hand, they've got to be regretting Christian Cage, because that was lukewarm at best. The match itself I actually quite enjoyed. I really liked the old school psychology Matt showed of actually picking a body part, went to work on the neck, kept working on the neck, his finisher attacks the neck, so it all seemed like a logical ancient pro wrestling, apparently not cool anymore, way to go. But Christian Cage to me just reminds me of somebody coming up to you and being like, hey, guess what, next week you're going to have free ice cream. Oh, my God, can you believe it? Free ice cream. And you show up next week, and they're like, come on, get hyped. Here comes your free ice cream. And it's vanilla. So,
it's something I noticed, too. I think you can notice all the strong reactions. And yes, Christian's was lukewarm. I think there's an argument to be made that, like, Matt Hardy's reaction was rivaled his, you know, and I think the telling piece of the puzzle here is you look across the show, and the guys who are getting the biggest reactions, Darby Allin, you know, Adam Page, you know, Ricky Starks, Sammy Guevara, they're, you know, it's not that like Chris Jericho, I'm sure, would have got a big reaction in front of the live audience, no doubt, but you have this, you know, this young core base of that company that is delivering in a big way. And like, you know, we talk about them like they're up and comers because they're not, you know, household names. They've only been on national television for, you know, a handful of years, you know, people that you casual fans might not know who they are yet, but in this AEW environment, they're getting, you know, the strongest reactions. And I think if you're Tony Khan, you have to look to, okay, how do you leverage that so that you can start, you know, building them up as stars outside of everybody that already knows them? Like, that's the new path for Tony Khan. How do you make Adam Page into a bigger name than he is? How can you market him so that he can, you know, draw new fans in? Same thing with Darby Allin, same thing with Guevara and whoever else. But you have that core base, Eric, and that's, you know, that's important. It really is important.
Yeah, to Chris's first point about Sammy, but the totality of my notes of that match are, well, Sammy's over. so I tended to notice that, too. And I thought they gave Yuta a bit here even though they were pressed for time and it was just a 4-minute match. So that was interesting. I think, you know, Christian Cage, so if Tony Khan hadn't overhyped his signing and, like, you know, you're in politics, the slogan is under promise and over deliver. Well, Tony Khan did the exact opposite for that. He was clearly so in love with the fact that he signed Christian Cage and signed him a couple months after his Royal Rumble comeback that, you know, got a pop, that he overhyped him. And if he would have, you know, everyone wanted CM Punk or, you know, whoever they wanted, and they got Christian Cage. And I think Christian's been suffering from that ever since. And it's not Christian Cage's fault that they misplayed his introduction. But it's Christian Cage's responsibility now to try and dig out from under it. And I'm just not sure he's done enough to do that. He comes out and he doesn't get reactions. He hasn't really changed. He's got this sort of lame outwork everyone, you know, milquetoasty kind of slogan. And you know, Matt Hardy, at least in his sort of old age, gets to play this annoying heel. At least he can show off his charisma. And, you know, Christian's not really getting to do a lot of that.
No, he's not. And it's just, again, it's telling. I mean, that audience is there, you know, not – it's not that, like, they're upset seeing Christian Cage, but they're not there to see him. And I think that's the important differentiation. Chris, back to you. By the way, I agree with you guys. The match, the Guevara match was just, it felt just weird. It felt off. It felt like it was almost like it was being cut real time. Like they said, hey, you thought you had this much, but now you have this. You're like, pivot. Because, yeah, it felt a little bit off. But, yeah, Chris, back to you. Good topic.
Well, it's like that's why the ice cream thing works, right? Is because nobody complains about free ice cream, even if it is vanilla, but you're just way less excited than you thought you should have been.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to bring up as a conversation topic was the labors of Jericho or the whatever they're calling it. I've been a big fan of this inner circle pinnacle angle, and I think doing it this way and going through the singles matches now is going to work fine. What I really don't like in wrestling at all is pick your stipulation matches, because why isn't MJF picking a Christian or a Jericho has to wrestle with both shoulders on the match at all times stipulation? Like, there's nothing stopping him, right? Like, there's no rules around this. And like, we all know what's going to happen. We know he's going to beat all of them, and putting it in, it doesn't really matter what you put him in. And if it were somebody that we actively wanted to see in these matches, like if it was Sammy, sure. But it's not like Jericho has been blowing the roof off the place with his performances recently. The man is 50, but he acts 15 and he wrestles like he's 60. He's slower than he used to be. He's still got all the personality and he has adapted his style. But it's sad to watch him knowing what he used to be capable of. So putting him through a gauntlet of matches that we know he's going to win with stipulations that somebody who's supposed to be a mastermind could have picked better ones is just doing nothing for me. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Yeah. Okay, Eric, go ahead first. I'll throw to you first.
You know, this whole feud has been done backwards, right? We had the most intense match first, another intense match second at the pay-per-view. The problem is when you have Chris Jericho in the first match falling off a cage, and then, you know, and then what they did at the spectacle of Stadium Stampede 2, there's not a lot of places to go. And I this labors of Jericho thing feels a little lame, a little forced. It's a fine, you know, it's good enough, right? It's good enough to continue the feud. Everybody knows Jericho is going to find a way through all of the labors and get a pay-per-view match with MJF, presumably at All Out. And that's fine. It'll be entertaining. I mean, maybe you can keep these matches short because Chris is absolutely correct. It's so weird to think of Jericho just, 2018, 2019, wrestling in New Japan and having these matches that people really enjoyed. and now he's goes to the steakhouse a little bit too much, and you know, he is what he is, and kind of coasting in ring because he can get away with it, maybe because he's so charismatic, as Chris noted. So I guess on balance, it's fine, but it's suffering from starting off high and then going low instead of starting off low and building it. What are your thoughts, Zach?
Yeah, I think I'm a little higher on it than you guys are. I you know, the one thing that I'm down about is just that you do know how it's going to end, you know, so it takes away, or it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they can build any drama and intrigue around these matches, because, you know, you know where they're going. They're going to this, they're going to get to MJF versus Chris Jericho somehow. And if you lay out these stipulations, well, you know that Jericho is going to overcome. And that's not always a bad thing. Cause you know, if it's sometimes the A to B route is the best route to get to an end point, you know, and sometimes that's the way to go. But in wrestling, you've got to try to build some drama around it. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that. The stipulations, I give them credit, but I got to see how it works, because I'm wondering if the stipulations are in place to almost to protect Jericho in the ring, to get, you know, he's got an out now where he doesn't have to have, you know, a 4-star classic on the mat with Shawn Spears, but they're going to have this chair element involved. So I think it adds another layer, another tool in the toolbox for the match for them to play off of, where they don't need to lean on Jericho's, you know, just wrestling ability, because you're right. Absolutely. Like, he's not in that place anymore. Like, seeing him in 5 presumably singles matches or close to is not something that I think, you know, people are, you know, salivating at the opportunity for, but it's more this story. And I thought Jericho set the table with a decent enough promo tonight. And, you know, if this was going on at the top of the card, okay, I'd probably be going, all right, they need to pivot on this thing. But this is a, you know, upper mid card feud. I think it's going to, you know, create some decent, you know, in-person moments for fans that are in the building cheering on kind of the legacy Chris Jericho. So, you know, yeah, I think it's not great, but I'd classify it as better than fine. How about that? Chris, back to you.
Well, one thing I wanted to point out there is that even if it's each a member of Pinnacle individually, that's only 4 before he gets to MJF. So who's the 5th one? That's something to keep in mind.
I think the 5th one is MJF. I had a hard time with that last week as well, but I believe that is what it is. Like,
it could also be that the FTR match is handicap and there's still a surprise to come. I don't think this is going to be straightforward. If it is, it's a disappointment.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see soon enough. Did they announce the first one for next week? I didn't catch that, Eric.
They did.
Yeah.
It is next week. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Cool.
So,
cool.
Just
all right, Chris,
a couple of real quick hitters.
Yeah.
These are sort of rapid fire ones. It's been 2 years. Both of them are now back in the country, and we still don't know why Riho pushed Yuka Sakazaki in Fyter Fest 2019. Did Matt Jackson really say PU on national TV? And I really, really wish JR hadn't called attention to the expression on Jungle Boy's face.
Yes. Well, yeah, what'd you make of that, Eric?
I missed it. I saw the dinosaur was a little bit late making the save, but Jungle Boy was right in there and protected Christian Cage. What was the reaction on Jungle Boy's face?
So the reaction came like kind of after the save when Luchasaurus put Christian on his shoulders and not Jungle Boy. And then so they had Jungle Boy kind of looking up at him and kind of had to look on his face. And then JR called it out to really draw attention to it at that. Because if you were just watching it and JR didn't call attention to it, maybe you would have noticed it. And if you're looking for it or if you caught it, but yeah, JR like called specific attention to it. So yeah, that made me furrow my brow a little bit too, Chris. Cause I was like, really? They're going to go like you're on this kind of like sympathetic, hot-ish babyface run with Jungle Boy. Like, I don't know. I would not kind of throw any kind of water on that with some dissension with his, you know, with his Jurassic Express pals, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Christian is the one who turns heel in this equation, not Jungle Boy, right? It's not going to be Jungle Boy being jealous and turning heel.
Let's
I don't
hope so.
That would be crazy. I don't know
well,
why
yeah, I mean
do that.
Well, exactly. Let's hope so. But like JR's comment kind of like took you off the scent there a little bit because it was very, very, very odd.
Yeah, well, every week JR is very odd, right? At least he didn't botch the name of the promotion this week. I just it's hard to watch legends lose their fastball, and I wonder at what point does Tony Khan have to talk to JR? Is he even capable of doing that, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, Chris, you caught it. I mean, I didn't get the sense it was a slip on his part. You've been told to say that.
Yeah, I don't. So, Jay, we know that they don't get produced anywhere near as much as WWE announcers get produced. And JR is famous for saying, "I don't want to know what's happening. Give me the order sheet, and I will freelance and throw out sound bites." Part of me wonders if when QT did the turn on the Nightmare Family, and he had that expression on his face behind Lee Johnson when Johnson got his first win and thanked everybody except QT. A lot of people missed that expression on his face, and I'm wondering if they're not worried that that's going to happen again. But having called it out, he said Jungle Boy with an inquisitive look on his face, and he didn't call him Jungle Jack Perry, which he never does. He said Jungle Boy with an inquisitive look on his face. Interesting. And I'm like, okay, the first part was bad enough, but by saying interesting, I think that adds another layer of suspicion to it now. And I don't know, like, there's no way you turn
the psychology.
Absolutely. I mean, whatever they're going for tonight, I don't think it worked tonight. And I don't think, that audience is not going to let it work. I mean, Jungle Boy's not turning heel. Like, dissension, no dissension. It's just not happening.
And they're going to have to turn Christian at some point to get their money's worth out of him because he's got the natural glide path to heal them here because I came to this promotion and you fans crapped all over me. He's got the Rocky Maivia sort of angle, die Rocky, die. He's got that whole thing going for him. You guys ignored me. I'm a legend. And so he's going to turn heel and take it out on Jungle Boy. I mean, I actually would like to see heel Christian versus Jungle Boy. I think that would be interesting. Heel Jungle Boy versus face Christian. Oof.
I agree. Chris, good topic. I had it in my notes and glad you brought it up, man. Thank you.
Yep. No, thanks, gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of your evening and looking forward to hear what other people think.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Chris. Appreciate it. Take care. All right. We'll go to a Skype call here. Skype call, if you hear the beep, that's you. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach. Hey, Eric. This is Hinton from London, Ontario.
Hey, Hinton. What's up, man? Good to talk to you. What'd you think of Fyter Fest tonight?
I thought it was a great show, which I haven't said in a while. I really enjoyed it, but there's some things I would like to nitpick. A little bit of pushback toward your glowing praise on that Paige Elite promo. I'm not really one to be wooed by crowd reactions. I tend to have my own mind. So, I mean, overall segment I thought was good. Let's just get that out of the way. Adam Page is clearly over. I'm happy for him. I like him. And the Elite do get some heel heat, which I'm surprised by, and I'm actually really happy that they do because I was really worried that the fans are just going to cheer Omega. But no, they're getting heat, and I'm impressed by that. I think that Paige, when he's talking alone, is kind of in Dolph Ziggler mode. He kind of yells too much. I'm really not a fan when he's talking. He's got a presence. He's got a much better presence than Dolph Ziggler, but his mic work needs improvement, in my opinion. Small point, I don't get why the Elite freaked out when Paige laid out the stipulations initially because they could have just stayed calm and said no because it's not like they were obligated to listen. They could have just been almost a Triple H type heel that just, all right, smile and, let Don Callis then whisper into your ear. That's something that I would probably, if I was a producer, they'd just kind of go backstage and say, listen, you don't have to freak out and sell literally everything, even when it doesn't make sense to. My big point is the Dark Order. who still outnumber the elite. And I don't understand how I'm supposed to feel sympathy for a babyface who has categorically more men on his side than the heels. And I feel like this is AEW's formula, where the babyface is almost never, they're almost never without backup. We saw that with Darby Allin in the main event, right? They don't, this company doesn't generate babyface sympathy by having the heels outnumber the faces. I understand that what you guys were talking about earlier, maybe the story is that the Dark Order are quote-unquote outcasts too, who Paige feels comfortable hanging out with, but I'd be a lot more okay with it if there were maybe two or three guys max, because there's a lot of them, and they're all fairly athletic-looking guys who've had competitive, you know, title matches, TNT title matches at least, and I don't really see them as outcasts, to be honest. There's a lot of them. That by definition doesn't really make them outcasts, and you know they're stars of all the shoulder programming that AEW has to offer. So this is something that's really preventing me from feeling sympathy.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. It crossed my mind too. I guess here's how my take on it goes, at least so far, given kind of the direction or where they are at right now in the story. So I guess I'm giving them a little bit of leniency on that because, you know, yes, the Dark Order are, there's more of them in terms of like bodies, right? But the Dark Order is not, you know, they're not presented as, you know, even mid-card kind of talents. They're outcasts by name, but they're also treated in terms of their kind of, you know, in-ring presentation as kind of just okay. Like, and then on the other side, you have Kenny Omega, the AEW World Champion. You've got the Young Bucks, the tag team champions. You've got Gallows and Anderson, who are, you know, former Impact tag champions. So, I mean, I, you know, yeah, in terms of bodies, Dark Order outnumbers them, Eric, but I guess I just see it as, you know, yes, this is a group of kind of misfits banding together, but on the other side, you got a lot of power, and there is still some sympathy there in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, they're a comedy act, right? I mean, they're on the shoulder program you talked about on Being the Elite before the Nick and Matt Jackson banned the Dark Order. I mean, they were on every week doing 10 minutes of like shtick that sometimes worked and worked better when Brody Lee was still with us. And sometimes it doesn't work, but they are one of the, so as for the backup, one of the common criticisms of WWE programming has been that the baby faces are dumb and that they don't have any friends and that nobody ever helps, you know, rarely or not as often as people would like is a save made. I guess AEW would be the opposite of that. People do have friends. They are going to try and help them. And naturally, they're going to come out of the locker room and try and make the save. They see what's going on. And AEW generally has a reason why that doesn't happen when they actually want to get heel heat on a babyface with a beatdown, right? Chris Jericho ran to the back to try and, you know, help somebody, that kind of thing. And, you know, leaving people outnumbered. So I guess I'm okay with the backup part. Dark Order, half of them are sort of like jobbers, so I don't, you know, is it a numbers advantage if they're just a bunch of jobbers, I guess? I guess numerically, but maybe not skill-wise. And then, as for the other thing, to me, the story they told tonight about, you know, one, AEW does not have an on-screen commissioner, hardly ever, right? You get sort of, Tony Khan has declared X, that he speaks through Tony Schiavone. When they have to do that. But the story they told tonight was Kenny Omega thought, you know, they threw this stipulation out there. Kenny Omega went into the ring to hammer home this story that Paige is afraid to fail, and he gave him a chance to walk away. And Kenny Omega assumed that Adam Page would bottle it, he would become a coward, he would let his anxious millennial cowboy persona take over, and he wouldn't, and he would say no. And Kenny's ploy didn't work, so his natural reaction would be, ah, crap, I got to have the match now. I didn't want the match. And so I guess, to me, that was the story they told, and you may not like that story, but I think it made logical sense, at least.
Yeah, and here's the other thing that I it's all in the follow-up, right, in pro wrestling. Like, that's the name of the game. And I think, like, look, if we see in 2 weeks' time or 3 weeks' time where, you know, Paige and the Dark Order, you know, on a regular basis are, you know, running off the Elite, you know, as a group regularly, yeah, then I think, you know, my opinion is going to pivot, and I'm going to say, hey, you are throwing cold water on that opportunity to build some sympathy for Adam Page. My sense is that it's going to go the other direction, where they're going to use the Dark Order to, like, double and triple down on that sympathy. I think we're going to see segments of, you know, the Elite just taking out members of the Dark Order, you know, picking them off one by one, two by two, you know, like to get that heat and to get that sympathy taken away, you know, Paige's, you know, friends and people who are backing him. So I think that's coming. If it doesn't, Hinton, you know, then we'll, you know, I amend some of these comments for sure. But back to you.
I am already at that stage where I think that these guys have run out too much to help the baby faces in droves. They just come in like this gang of, like, buff guys. I don't even buy the notion that they're jobbers, to be honest with you, because these guys, when Tony Khan wants to, they build them up for these title matches. They built up Evil Uno. They built up, what's that guy's name, Johnny Hungy, John Silver, whatever his name is. Like, they really did a good job giving pizzazz to them, building up them up. They're not the social outcasts from, you know, WWE. Who are those guys? Bo Dallas and Mr. Perfect's son. Forgot who he is. So they're far from those guys. So I think they're already a level above, but I think we'll agree to disagree. I'm just at a different stage. And also regarding, you know, the Elite beating up two or three of them. I mean, these guys, they have no concept of social distancing. They're always together. I can't buy that they're ever, I don't know how they, unless they show me backstage how they managed to separate two of them. Yeah, go on, Hayden.
Well, let me ask you this, Hinton, because I'm curious. Like, so what could save the not save, because you didn't say it was a horrible angle, but what could get you more, you know, interested in what they're doing or back on board?
I just have the Dark Order do something else. I mean, they're just too many of them. It's a base faction. Like, And they're not complete jobbers, because the other answer would be make them actual jobbers, and I don't want them. I think they're a talented group. I think each member of the Dark Order has something to contribute. I don't want them to WWE-fy them. I just kind of don't want them with Paige, because there's just way too many. But I'll move on. I think I've said my piece there. I want to talk
fair
about
enough,
the, yeah. I want to talk about the opening match. I thought Anderson was portrayed a little bit too heavy-handedly as, like, a singles threat to Jon Moxley, based on his New Japan credentials, because in AEW canon, this guy is just a goon for Kenny, right? Like, that's all he is in AEW canon. So, and Excalibur tried, he's like, oh, back in 2012, 9 years ago, this guy made it to the G1 finals. I'm like, okay, you know what, I'll buy it, sure, but I think this match was a little maybe too competitive for my taste, but fine, I can deal with that. What really bugged me was afterward, when we now have a death match with only 1 week of AEW television buildup. So are the non-New Japan fans supposed to just sit back and go, well, they fought in New Japan, Moxley won, and then they went their separate ways, and then they met up for an AEW title match, which Moxley won, and then they went their separate ways again, and now, with only 1 week of buildup, and in AEW canon, they've only had one match before, and Lance Archer is supposed to be a face, you know, presumably. I'm expected to get excited for a death match just based on the premise and the sheer spectacle of it, rather than an actual story, because the real story is in another company that I haven't seen before. So I don't know if 1 week's buildup, just because they're in Texas, is worth it for, like, a freaking death match. It feels very self-indulgent, and like they're just pulling out all the stops just because now they're finally in and amongst crowds. What do you guys think of this?
I think that I agree with you for the most part. This match, however, is doing double duty. For AEW, it was a way to start off an episode of Dynamite in a hot way. I think they were protecting Carl Anderson and giving him more offense, because this match is also going to go up on New Japan World, right? And so New Japan's Japanese fans and American fans who subscribe to the service are going to have access to it and see it, and you want to protect Carl Anderson, especially if he's, say, coming back later this year for World Tag League in New Japan. You know, that's why you have that striking battle, right, that you don't always see in AEW, but you see in just about every New Japan match. As for the, you know, and Excalibur did do his best to try and put a backstory about, to try and answer your very question as a viewer, which is, why in the hell is Carl Anderson, who's wrestled like a couple of matches here on Dynamite and a little bit on Dark, why should he be a threat? And Excalibur tried to fill it in. It was just a tough sales job. I agree that the Lance Archer Moxley match could have used at least another week to build, right? Who care? You know, you're in Texas, great. Who really cares? You could have a Texas death match just as well the following week, wherever they are in late July 28th. So I'd want to see next week. I'd want to see video from New Japan of that great match those two had at the Tokyo Dome that they talked about, right? Moxley and Archer. I'd want to see video of the AEW World Title match that those two had, and we're not going to get that. And I do worry. Lance Archer sort of fades in and out, and he's never sort of not really gotten a consistent push.
Mm-hmm.
Can this guy afford to take another loss? I mean, he will have lost like every big match he's had in AEW, every title shot, and you sort of define him downward, and maybe they're okay with that. But I mean, the guy can work. He's an agile big man. He's got a cool look. He's viewed as a badass. You know, he could do the rope walk. There's something there, and who knows? Maybe Lance Archer will win in his home state of Texas. And the excuse is that Mox was so beaten up from Carl Anderson this week that he lost the title. The other thing is, I know New Japan has some sort of show in August out in L.A. That they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so does any of this have anything to do with trying to help New Japan, their sort of quasi partners, set up some sort of angle to sell tickets and or pay, you know, Fight TV English version pay-per-view buys for their partner, right? I guess we'll see, but yeah, Hinton's right. On balance, this one needed to breathe a little bit more.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. I think the match is going to be good. I think, you know, they'll deliver. Moxley usually does, especially in that type of environment with that type of match and that type of stipulation. But I do agree. I think they can, you know, if you're going to, like, look, you have this partnership, and I don't know the intricacies of the deal in terms of what they can use, what they can talk about, what they can't. But, you know, if you're going to, you know, tell these stories and have those matches, I think you want to, I think it's just for the good of the partnership. You know, you want to talk about it, talk about their history. You want to tell the story well enough where you got a portion of the AEW audience who's maybe not, you know, checked out any New Japan going and looking for that match, you know, over there. I mean, I think, and if you tell it right and you promote it right and you hype it the right way, I think you will have folks that do that, that choose to do that. So yeah, a little rushed. I wonder, you know, if that show in August has something to do with it, to try to get an angle here. There's a surprise coming next week, and we get, you know, some sort of insight as to who, you know, Moxley's opponent might be on that show if he retains. So I think there's a lot of balls in the air, but I think next week when the show is over and the match is over, I think we'll have some insight as to why it was rushed away the way that it was. But time will tell. Hinton, anything to wrap up tonight for us?
Yeah, I'll wrap up on a positive note. The Miro promo was the best thing ever. I love how he pushed aside his first few months. And, you know, just as I wasn't myself, and then I heard this voice, and now look at me. It was just, his delivery was so cool. The only thing that maybe slightly ruined it for me was the Rampage commercial, where it ends with Miro saying, "This is Rampage." And I just want to believe that Miro's the kind of guy who wouldn't care to go into a studio to record his voice for Tony Khan, like for the company. But it didn't ruin it for me. I just thought, you know, I would have had a different wrestler do that, but not, I love the Miro promo, and I have been I will be covering the Rampage hits and misses for the Torch when it starts airing. So look forward to that, everyone.
Great.
Congrats.
Congrats. Absolutely. Yeah. Hinton, thanks for the call. Very much appreciated. Always really good insight and really good topics. I'm loving what Miro's doing, Eric. I think he's really at a point where, you know, that he can soon become, you know, a heel challenger possibly to Adam Page. You know, if Page takes the world title, you know, you're going to want to have hot heels ready for him. And, you know, he strikes me as a guy that, you know, look, not maybe not by the end of this year, but some point next year, if he keeps on this trajectory, you know, I think he's going to be somebody that they can go to and make some money with, Page versus Miro.
I have to tell you, there aren't many wrestlers in the year 2021 who legitimately scare the hell out of me, but Miro is one of them, right? Like in the 80s as a kid, I'd have been scared of Bruiser Brody or Terry Funk, you know, or Stan Hansen, like Wade has talked about. You know, he came through the crowd, he swung that cowbell, and you either got out of the way or you were going to get hit. But man, Miro, just that sort of, I'm not saying he uses any substances, but he is that sort of roid ragey kind of persona that's just terrifying. The one thing is, how about getting this guy some opponents and some credible opponents? I mean, he's just squashed everybody and beat Lance Archer pretty well at the pay-per-view. And that was sort of his only big opponent since he took the belt from Darby. Let's get some faces to challenge the guy.
Yep. I agree. And I don't know, you know, Darby had a big win in the main event. I mean, you could do that rematch. I think that's, you know, in the cards at some point, but for him to get to that point of like, okay, this guy is now, you know, a main event level heel for us. Yeah. He's got to have a good run here with the belt and a lot of, you know, good matches, credible wins. But you know, it's in the stars for him, I think, to be something. Let's go back to the phones. Another Skype call. If you hear the beep, Yeah, easy for me to say. We will go to Jay in Hartford instead. Jay, great to hear from you, my friend. What did you think of the show tonight?
Good evening, Zach and Eric. I thought it was a good show. And the previous caller pretty much brought up what I wanted to mention, Lance Archer. So what I wanted to bring up about Lance Archer is that I'm not interested, basically. they brought him in, he was a heel, and they put him with Jake, and they seemingly turned him. But the last couple of months for me has been kind of confusing, and I haven't really known how to take his character. Lately, he feels kind of like Charlotte for me. You know what I mean? Just although they've kind of, you know, been a little better with her, you know, as far as like, okay, she's more of a clear heel now. But I just don't know. And when I thought he had turned face, now, I mean, I guess he can still be a face in his match against Jon Moxley, but I just don't know how to feel about Lance Archer. And so I guess the larger question is, and I agree with the previous caller who I think was Hinton, but I agree with as far as like now we have this Texas Death match just kind of out of nowhere. I didn't know that Jon Moxley had beat Lance Archer for this title in a Texas Death match previously. And so it doesn't excite me. Hopefully the match is good. But what I'm really getting at on the Lance Archer point, and I'll let you guys go, I won't stay on long, is with the whole face heel dynamic nowadays and how, you know, even WWE, but both companies seem to have cases where they're just putting people out there. And I guess the point is to let the fans decide. But, and you know, Wade talks about it, you know, it gets brought up often. JR is big on it. Like, I don't see where the problem with just having faces and heels. Like, you can have face versus face, you can have heel versus heel, but to have characters that have no clear like goals or no clear definition or alignment, it makes it really difficult for me to get into that character. I mean, people cheer heels and people boo faces or whatever, but it doesn't mean that you don't, that you can't present them, you know, if they're going to be a heel, let them, you know, gang up on, you know, whatever, the good guy, or let them cheat to win and have a manager who interferes, things like that. Do things that, you know, that are considered dastardly. Why all of this middle in the road? Like, I'm just not sure where, I mean, I don't have the answers. I've never booked a wrestling company, right? But I'm not sure where this shades of gray thing is so, even Austin, you know, he was, you know, he started out as a heel, he became a face. He was a face. Like, he wasn't breaking the rules in matches. Like, he knew he was a face, even though he was, like, a face who cursed and drank beer and disliked it. Nowadays, it's really hard for a lot of these characters. And when there's no clear definition, it makes it hard to enjoy the character themselves or get into their matches. So next week, I'm rooting for Moxley, but only because it's Moxley. And, you know, he's a face, clearly, and he's, you know, top star. But Lance Archer, he can just – if he was no longer on TV, I wouldn't miss him because I'm not interested. Sorry, I rambled there.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I am on him.
No, it's a good point. And I mean, I'm right there with you when it comes to this stuff, generally speaking. I mean, I think there is a time and a place to kind of live in that gray area for sure. But, you know, throughout AEW's history, I think for too many top acts, they have lived in that spot rather than just lining up on the heel and babyface side, which I just think is, you know, effective pro wrestling. Like I said, there's a time and a place to get to, you know, into nuanced storytelling and things of that nature. But I mean, when you look at the company holistically, you know, you had the Young Bucks who were kind of straddling that line for a good chunk of their time. I think, you know, Kenny Omega even at times was straddling that line of heel and babyface. Adam Page too. You didn't really know how to feel about him, like, during the, you know, that pandemic run there. And so, you know, they've started to, I think they started to figure that out, because you've got the Young Bucks lined up one way, you got Adam Page on one side. There's still a couple stragglers, though, you know, and Lance Archer's one of them. And I, you know, to me, that's why he's a little, you know, he's cooler than other, and by cooler, not like cool, but like cold in terms of an act that people are invested in, because he's flipped around so often. You know, he's been in the babyface spot, he's faced Miro, now he's facing Jon Moxley. I just don't think you can, like, the audience hasn't had time to connect with him because he's pivoted so often. And so maybe that's by definition, like, maybe Tony Khan wants to keep some of those kind of like drifters on the roster that he can plug into different spots just to fill a TV show and book a show. But even if that's the case, that doesn't mean Lance Archer is set up for long-term success, Eric. And I think, you know, it's, you know, I don't think he's going to be the guy that you strap your company to, but he can be a monster heel if booked properly.
Yeah, I mean, my notes for that are Mox Lance Archer, comma, who is a heel again, question marks. You know, he was just out there saving Sting and Darby Allin, just not, you know, before the Miro challenge. And they saddled him with Jake Roberts, who's just – just, you know, give Jake a paycheck and he doesn't need to ever appear on camera again. I'd be fine with that. I wonder if Lance Archer doesn't have political clout in the company, or doesn't, you know, I mean, there's so many guys booking their own stuff, and is it, you know, it's just the inconsistent push. Sometimes he disappears from TV for weeks at a time. I know, you know, his title match got delayed last year due to COVID, case or exposure or something like that, but they eventually had it. But pick a lane with the guy. Heel probably would be the way I would go. I also would note, we can't forget that before AEW started, or at the dawn of AEW, a person no less than Cody Rhodes explained to all of us that, oh, face heel, that's so outdated. That ironically, that was before Cody became the biggest baby, you know, the biggest guy portrayed as a traditional baby face in the promotion for the entirety of his run. So, but that's what Cody would have us believe.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I think that's like, I think it sounds good to say, you know, but it's hard to live in that world in terms of just practical execution on a week to week basis. You know, I mean, like, people are drawn to good guys versus bad guys, you know? And like I said, there's time always for that middle ground. But I think for that middle ground to work, you have to establish the lanes, you know, and if you don't establish those lanes, you're going to have a hard time playing in that middle ground anyway. But again, I think the last 6 months, AEW has done a better job, a much better job of lining up that talent in the right way. And you're seeing the fruits of that labor with the Young Bucks presentation and Omega and Paige and Miro, you know, and Lance Archer just hasn't fallen into, you know, a specific lane yet, but maybe that's coming. But he also just might be a perpetual kind of utility person that just gets plugged here and there to make matches happen. Jay, back to you for another topic, man.
So, yeah, I thought I was done, but I remembered something else that kind of stood out to me on the show. Britt Baker, who I've enjoyed her work recently, but she's kind of she's not Lance Archer for me, right? You know, she's not like there, but at the same time, I'm trying to understand if she's in the middle of a face turn and it's happening slowly, or if I'm just supposed to consider her a face because the crowds are cheering her. I don't think she's done anything yet for me, you know, like to character-wise go, yes, I like her and like rah-rah, I want her to win her matches. That said, I am rooting for her against Nyla Rose. And in Nyla Rose's promo, she said something that stood out to me as like not really, I didn't know where it was coming from. She said, like, you've had everything handed to you. And to be honest, when she said it, that turned me off from, like what does that even mean? Like, I haven't noticed that on AEW television. And when AEW started, you know, Britt Baker, we all recall, was like this face who, I guess, was sort of floundering and everything until they turned her heel and she had the injury and then, boom, DMD, she took off. So, and obviously to get her dentist, what's the word I'm looking for, her, you know, degree in dentistry or whatever, she had to like work for that or something. Like that line made no sense. I don't think that anyone's ever said that she's had things handed to her. It's not like if she was, you know, say Cody, a second generation star, and you could use that, whether it was true or not, you could leave the line. For Nyla Rose to say that, what am I missing about Britt Baker's character that it even matched up to what we've seen?
I mean, it's a callback to the start when AEW was doing all their media when they launched and announced the TV deal. Britt Baker was among the chosen few who went to New York for media day. But to your point, how the heck would you know that unless you were a total AEW nerd who remembered everything, right? You wouldn't. You just wouldn't. So it didn't make any sense out of context, right?
Right. No, it didn't. It definitely didn't. And I think that was kind of the dots they were trying to connect. But that's, you know, boy, I mean, they're in a whole new world, you know, where that, I mean, that's, I think that's hard to remember even for like the most prudent, you know, AEW fan that happened. I thought it sounded out of place too, but you bring up a good point about Britt Baker, and I'm glad we're able to get to this tonight. Tonight to me, that was a babyface promo, you know, I mean, that was a babyface promo at the heel opponent. Like, that promo to me said, hey, Britt Baker is a babyface now, and she's not going to, like, go back to that, you know, early AEW babyface character of hers. She's still going to, you know, bring the, you know, the sting on the mic and have her one-liners and have the attitude. But even though she had that tonight, there still was a tone around her, along with the crowd reaction behind her, that said, hey, you know, she's a babyface now, Eric, and what did you make of it?
So I think, you know, if we rewind the tape to the pay-per-view, Sheeta, right? So Sheeta was supposed to be the babyface in that match, and Britt, like, the crowd was just pulling for the title change because they were there and they wanted news to be made, right? Crowds, live wrestling crowds in the modern era pull for title changes, even if it's a heel, so they could say they were there. And so Britt sort of got that face reaction, the first big crowd they had, the flying crowd they had for the pay-per-view. And then they did that obnoxious cheeseburger angle where, you know, she did the reverse Oprah, you know, look under your chairs. Oh, no, I didn't give you all cheeseburgers. And so that was very heelish, right? But then her first opponent that they have, if they're trying to keep her a heel, then the first opponent should not be Nyla Rose, who wrestles as a heel, and there's no ambiguity about Nyla being a heel. So why, you know, if you're trying to fight a Britt Baker face turn this early, you should have picked a different wrestler. Now, the problem is AEW's women's division has always been kind of disorganized and not as well booked as it maybe people would like. We hear a lot of criticism for AEW about the women's division. And so my guess is that Britt defeats Nyla and then goes on, because they'll have babyface challengers set up for her. Maybe Yuka Sakazaki gets a quick title match before she goes back to Japan after her excursion. You've got Riho potentially out there, and Thunder Rosa. They could run that match back, right, where Britt was definitely the heel in the Thunder Rosa match. Is any of it going to matter? Is Britt already got the Roddy Piper heel but gets cheered thing? I mean, it sure seems like it. But AEW's booking isn't, in choice of opponents, isn't helping stop that.
Right. And so I hope, you might very well be right. I kind of hope you're wrong, though, because I think, you know, you pick a lane with her because that's, you know, what got her to the dance. Like, you know, that heel turn, that attitude, that got her over. And, yeah, you can pivot her now and make her a babyface. She gets the crowd reaction is there for her. So I don't think it's – I think you're swimming upstream if you're going to try to turn her heel anyway, because I think you just have an AEW fan base that has just – you know, appreciated her work, you know, for this kind of this pandemic run, and have seen her really grow as a performer to someone from someone who's not over and pretty much, you know, flailing in the gimmick to a now, you know, a well-polished character that's out there. And so I'm riding that momentum. I'm riding that wave. I'm Tony Khan. I'm going, hey, you're wrestling Nyla Rose because you're a babyface, and don't change anything. Still be you, be your character. And, you know, we're just going to feed you heel opponents to kind of keep you over and keep you cheered. But, I just think if you go to the Thunder Rosa match, I think you can go to either way, because I think you can do a face-to-face matchup there. They have history. They've got, you know, the credibility in terms of, you know, having good matches together. And I think both now are, you know, are big enough, you know, women stars to go at it, babyface versus babyface. But I think if you try to, you know, pivot back to her being a heel after Nyla Rose here, I just think the storytelling is going to seem off, because you're going to have a arena full of fans that just aren't playing along. But we'll see. But that's, you know, when you have a genuine, authentic crowd reaction like that, to me, you run with it, because it doesn't grow on trees, and they have it. And, you know, I take that thing and run it down the field. Jay, anything else for us tonight, man?
Sure. I appreciate your takes on that. And I will say, I got to go back and watch Britt's promo again, simply because I was kind of rushing through the show. I fast forwarded through it, and then I kind of rewind back, started watching late because I wanted to try to call in tonight. So I'll watch that again. And I know, I mean, she's been great on her promos for like several months now. But this will be the last point. I said I had one point and I basically lied. Rampage, the new show. So I'm not sure where I am on this. Like, for me, like, I've never watched Dark Elevation, or I don't even know if it's one show or two. Like, I've never watched Dark. I've never watched Elevation. I don't watch anything outside of Dynamite. And really just because of time, right? There's lots of content to keep up with these days, wrestling and otherwise. And then there's life. So I'm wondering if this new show, Rampage, is too soon. We're just approaching, I think, the two-year mark, come October or something like that. And when I was seeing the preview tonight for Rampage, all I could think was Thunder, you know, like, and not that they're there, you know, like, oh, they're so bad and they won't have enough talent to, you know, produce two shows or whatever it is. But I just, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking like, oh, is this something, you know, that TNT asked for and they didn't really want to do? Like, I just hope that it's not a bad move. Like, with Raw and SmackDown, Raw especially lately, no, or both shows, right? It's rematch after rematch after rematch, week after week. These guys are like overexposed, even being just on once a week. And so AEW, I think they do it right, where they give us fresh matchups every week on Dynamite. But now, if this Rampage show is going to be equally as big as far as having the major stars on it, will the stars start to be overexposed because they're on twice a week? And to be honest, I already don't plan to watch Rampage because, again, it's just a lot to keep up with. I'll probably DVR it, and, yeah, I don't know. But I'm just wondering if it's the right move. And it's up against SmackDown on Fridays as well, so you take that into consideration. Just not sure that it was necessary, in my opinion. It's a little early.
Yeah, I mean, Here's the thing with that. It's like, on one hand, you know, it's very much a business decision. You know, if they can make revenue off that, I mean, they certainly have a roster, I think, that can put on two shows, you know, as that's the age-old question. Like, do you leave people wanting more, or do you kind of, you know, do the other show and take the money? And so, you know, clearly they decided to take the money. I think, you know, the second show, if you listen to Tony Khan talk, it sounds like that was always, you know, in the cards or in the cards for quite some time. So, you know, I guess, you know, you got to wait and see. You got to wait and see. I think the biggest challenge is going to making it must see like Dynamite is, and not kind of the, you know, the B show. You know, if it turns out to be the B show, I think it's going to have problems. But you got to figure out a way. Tony Khan and the company has to figure out a way to make that seem like, you know, number, you know, 2A, you know, not like an equal to Dynamite. And if we'll see if they can pull that off and they can do that, you know, then I think we'll have a different conversation here, you know, in about, you know, 4 or 5 months. If not, like, then I think it's going to fall. It kind of maybe into the dark zone, maybe not that low because it's on national television, but you know, you just don't want to have a B show this early in the run, Eric.
They, you know, Tony Khan has said that TNT really wanted a third hour of Dynamite, and Tony knows, you know, Tony's a wrestling fan and he's watched Raw, and that third hour is just death, right? I mean, it is just so hard to get through 3 hours of that show when it's good, much less what it is now. And so, you know, I guess one, they don't have enough time for the talent they now have on the roster. I mean, there's just guys you don't see week to week like you should, although they've been doing a better job of that. Two, as Zach noted, take the money and run. WWE is a $1 billion company. You're being paid for producing content. It's a content production, you know, business. And so take the money and sign some more stars. Take the Rampage money and sign Daniel Bryan. You know, who knows if that'll happen. But,
that would help.
You know.
Oh,
yeah. And we already know sort of how the ratings are going to turn out for Rampage. Because we just had a run in June when AEW effectively took the month of June off and lost a little bit of momentum coming out of that hot pay-per-view because their time slot was moved. And so you had to, you know, stay up late on a Friday night. And, you know, AEW draws a younger demographic and they go out on Friday nights. And so, but, you know, I think Wade has reported that the DVR numbers were okay. And I think for a lot of people, I'm not sure. I don't know. Do we have a time slot for Rampage? Is it 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern?
I think it's 10 Eastern.
Yeah, so, I mean, oh, yeah, so it's going to start after SmackDown ends.
Wow.
That would make sense. Then you get people turning the channel in theory. I don't know how much that happened last month when the AEW was on Friday nights, but
right.
If you watch it, great. It's, you know, it's an hour, so there's X number of minutes of commercials. So you're looking at 40 to 45 minutes if you fast forward through the commercials on Saturday morning, right? I mean, you can watch it. It can be a quick thing to do if you're not busy that weekend. I'm an AEW diehard, so I'm going to watch it. But, you know, why not? You could further some angles. You know, I guess the impact on the storytelling is if something happens on Rampage and they have half the audience that they do for Dynamite, then you got to do a lot of recapping, right? It's not two brands. It's the same brand. So they need to be cognizant of that. And sometimes they're not always good at that, AEW, at recapping things. Although they have taken Wade's advice over many, many months to heart, seemingly more recently on that score. They do a decent job of recapping things from the previous week to make them seem important.
Yeah. Yeah. Good topics, Jay. Anything else today? Is that it?
No. Thank you both. Zach, you do a great job filling in for Wade. So I enjoyed with you and Eric tonight. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for the kind words, Jay. And thanks for making the call. Great topics as always, man. Appreciate it. All right. We're going to wrap up the caller portion there and get to our on-site correspondent here. So thank you to everybody who called and contributed great topics all night long. And we're going to move to our on-site correspondent right now.